What do cooking and acting have in common? We answer that question and more this week on Only Stupid Answers. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Only Stupid Answers. This is a show where we answer your questions about movies, TV shows, comic books, and cooking. That's right. You're welcome. With me, as always, is Roxy Stryer. Hey, Roxy.
Hi, DJ.
How you doing? How are things?
A broken nail, DJ.
Oh, no. I wasn't quite sure what you were showing me at first.
It hurts.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I would say in terms of a horrific week for human beings everywhere, this isn't the biggest problem, but... You know, something that's also relatable to the long-nailed queens at home. Painful.
Adam and I were talking before we went on air, and I was saying, I'm glad this is just an entertainment show. I'm glad this is not like a news show. And wait, who's that? I mentioned Adam. Who's Adam? Oh, my God, we have a guest. Adam, introduce yourself to the kids at home.
Hi, my name is Adam Gertler, longtime friend and compatriot of one Miss Roxy Stryer. So happy to be here. I'm a man about town, fan of all the things you're talking about. Also a cook and a chef. I think we're going to talk about some of those things. So I walk in many worlds.
Yep. You have layers. You have layers. You house multitudes.
I contain multitudes, yes.
Yeah.
When I asked Adam to come on the show, I sent him a big novel. This is what the show is. These are the kind of questions. And he just wrote back, that's Friday the 13th. Spooky. Yeah. I was like, so yes.
I said it's the scariest of all Fridays. The 13th in October.
Yep. It's the one.
You'll be there? And he was like, oh, yeah, that was yes.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, totally. Sometimes when Roxy's reaching out to guests, she'll send me what she texts. And I was like, I got to steal. She does such a good job of saying, here's what the show is. Would you like to come on? It's like, I need to steal this because I feel like I make it too complicated. Second thing, Mike Joyce in the chat says, you broke a nail, but your hair looks phenomenal.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I work very hard on it.
Ladies.
My nails.
I shouldn't say, I was going to say ladies, it's harder with the hair than with fellas. I think I'm projecting just me. My hair is very easy.
Can I tell you guys the truth about the nail for a second? Do you want to know the tea or you don't want to know the tea?
Do it. Roxy, do it.
I was on a second date last night.
Yeah.
And we were playing Papa Shot at an arcade and playing basketball, I broke the nail. Uh-huh. And then for the entirety of the date, I couldn't stop talking about it because I was so upset. And finally, at the end of the date, he said, you've brought it up 7 times. I've been keeping track and I am not going to accept you bringing it up an 8th time. And I was like, that is so valid.
Yeah.
I couldn't shut the fuck up about my nail.
About your broken nail. Oh, no. Oh, no. The other thing, we brought up Friday the 13th, and I felt like, this is my tea? I don't know. Sometimes when I walk the dog, I pass a school, and the intercom came on, and the principal or teacher, whoever the one's running it, is like, hey, you all know what day it is, and then proceeded to play the Halloween theme, and I was like, wrong slasher film. And then after playing, basically the whole thing comes back on, they're like, it's not Halloween. But it's this day, Accident Awareness Day. I'm like, wrong again. You're not doing the right. I don't know that it was some sort of like keep an eye on your surroundings type day. But it was one of those like, wow, just such an interesting energy going on here. Anyway.
Super strange. Adam, I feel like you're working on a dissertation right now.
Yeah.
laser focused.
I have to approve the latest sausage for Doghouse.
What is it?
These LTOs this year.
Uh-huh.
So every month we've been doing a different sausage, part of the absolute worst sausage series. Because I work with Doghouse and I'm the Wurstmacher, the sausage maker.
Yeah.
So we had some issues with the testing. It was a very stupid thing to try to do like a new item for all of our like 50 stores across the country every month. There's a reason why like Taco Bell spends years R&Ding these things.
Yeah.
So this thing came in very late. And they're like texting me like, how is this for a description of the sausage? And I'm like, well, maybe leave that out and say this, because the marketing department is way behind and they're putting all this pressure on. But I'm like, I'm not at the factory when they're making the thing. And it's just.
Ooh, is that for man. November?
Yeah. So, yeah, we usually do this sausage called the turducken. But this year we've taken the duck out of it because while that is awesome, we felt like, you know, as we have more stores, it kind of may dissuade some people that are not used to eating duck. So we just kind of made it a turkey and chicken sausage. Yeah. It also has cranberry, sweet potato stuffing, rosemary, thyme, sage in the sausage, right? So we're trying to like for these sausages, we're putting like the whole party in the casing. And then we come up with these builds where we put, you know, with this one, we're putting like gravy on it. And what else did we do? Oh yeah, I put like a cranberry aioli in there, which was part of the thing. Like it needed a little bit more fat. So yeah, no, not a dissertation, just breaking sausage news.
Ooh.
Yeah. I love it. Listen, man, this is Welcome to Only Stupid Answers, where you go to get your sausage news. Before we get into that, was a little
the sausages made here, y'all.
For those, that's a little tease of what we're going to be talking about today, which is cooking. But before we get into that, a little business up top, as always, if you want to watch the show live, if you want to watch it ad free, if you want to watch Patreon exclusive shows like Spider-Versity and Q&A, you can do that over at, patreon.com/onlystupidanswers. If you give us a 5-star review on iTunes, we'd appreciate it. Also every week on Spotify, we ask a question. So be sure to tune into that on this episode if you're listening on Spotify. And of course, we got some entertainment news, not global international news, just some nice, easy entertainment news. First up, I thought this was interesting. I sent this to both of you. Deadline had an article that a bunch of producers have signed a petition for the AMPTPTP to take out one of them peas. More than 2,300 film and TV producers on Tuesday delivered a petition to the Alliance of Motion Pictures and Television Producers, President Carol Lombardi, demanding the dropping of the P being producers, from the acronym of the organization. Quote, it is not surprising producers want out of being considered part of the one. That group is comprised of signatory studios and streamers, not only were producers hobbled by the strikes as writers and actors, their lack of an effective guild leaves them in an unenviable position with the real members of the PPP. And it kind of goes on to talk about how like villainized, I'd say rightfully so, the AMPTPP has been in the strikes, and a bunch of people that aren't part of that group are like, please change your name. I think the suggestion, producers Billy Ray and Todd Garner on, I think it's their podcast, suggested it to be retitled the Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Companies, or alternately the AMPTS, and the S standing for studios or streamers. I support that just because it would be easier. Too many P's, in my opinion. It has been, as Roxy's noted, has been a struggle with me since the beginning of the strikes.
Yes, that is the big problem with the strikes.
This is the big one. AMPTS, easier. That's just easier for DJ to put down.
Yeah.
Does this mean that the producers just feel like that they weren't even part of the negotiation, like they kind of feel like caught in the middle? That's the feeling I'm getting, like they were not the ones strong-arming anybody.
That's at least the implication that this article is trying to put forward. I think there's a little bit of nebulous language around what constitutes a producer. I think this is more, you know, I think they're, it seems like, based on what I've been seeing, it is correct for them to point out that the AMPTPP represents studios as opposed to individual producers like somebody like Jason Blum or something like that. And I was a little unclear to me. They do mention the PGA, but I guess that's not really, they do not have the same union representation as somebody like the WGA or SAG. And so I do think, however anybody feels about this, there is some validity to clearing up the language Because it is a little unclear about, you know, when we're talking about the, it's less, it's more clear now. It's, you know, Netflix, Apple, Amazon, them. So that's what the AMPTP represents. But I do see how, like, and I also, with the backlash they've gotten, I also understand, like, hey, don't, if I were one of these producers, don't bring me into, I'm not one of these guys. Don't bring me into this.
I think it's probably for a couple different things. Number one, if you are a producer and you are not making, I don't know, $250 million a year.
Yes.
You probably don't want to be in the same category as an Iger or a Zaslav or a Sarandos, because you're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like,
yeah, yeah.
If we need to pay the people more. Okay. Because, yeah, you know, that's okay. And then also, I think they're not really producing. They're like studioing.
Yeah.
Right? They're not. It's like Iger is not really producing the movie. Mm-hmm. Sarandos is not really like producing his Netflix shows.
Yeah.
There are producers doing that. They're overloading.
It gets very nebulous, right? Because there's different kinds of producers. Like, financial. They are producing in the fact that it's their money. You know, if I'm putting up all the money for something, it's my production. Yeah. I can do anything if that is negotiated, right? Accepting that if the artists have negotiated final cut, these saves, right? Anything that is contractually negotiated. But typically, the producer produces. But then you have actors who get status producer, right? Yeah. And then you have actual on the ground producers who are, you know, working with location people, working out budgetary deals with certain towns to get dispensations to film in certain locations. Like, it's very, very nebulous. It just seems like producers want to be kept out of, like, the bad guy sort of rap, right? Like, they don't want to be included with the people that are preventing the industry from continuing.
Yeah.
I think that's right. I think that it's, like you said, it's a little nebulous. There's a bunch of different jobs, and maybe they want that more clarified. Like, they're the titles, there's not that many different kinds of directors, right? Like, if you're a director, we know what you did on the project.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're a writer, we know what you did on the project. If you're a producer, that could have been like fucking anything.
Yeah.
Right.
And they want clarity.
Right. To that point, yeah. Christopher Nolan is a producer on Oppenheimer too, right? Yeah. So it's like, is he working at his own cross purpose? No. Mm-hmm.
I just like you saying Oppenheimer too, as if there's another Oppenheimer coming.
Well, no, it did so well that they're letting him not only direct the sequel, but he's producing as well.
Producing it. Yeah, exactly. He's done it. He's done the thing.
You didn't think there's going to be a sequel the way they left it off? Come on.
Come on.
Fantastic. Yes.
It's going to cross over with Tenet. It's going to be great.
What is the storyline? It sounds sad.
I think Oppenheimer meets Matthew McConaughey in a library in the past, which is also the future.
Love it. I'm in. And McConaughey's like, don't do it. Don't do it, Oppie. Don't do it.
He's like, but I did it already. He's like, but you can undo the past with love.
Don't actually put this out, DJ, because Christopher Nolan is going to hear this and then do that.
And just take Nolan's our brilliant idea that we've given him. Billy Ray, that producer from earlier in the same article, mentions producers are people. The Alliance is an ill-fitting group of companies, and I've never felt that they were producers. Why are we giving them that identification? So we will see. But, you know, listen, anybody trying to distance themselves from the AMPTPP, I agree. I understand the impulse.
It's only two P's.
I don't PTP. I don't know. AMPTS, that's good. That's a solid one. I support that one.
Why? I have an easier time with AMPTP than AMPTS. Because, you know, when there's like a phone number you're trying to memorize, if there's two of the same numbers in it, it's easier than if they're all different
numbers.
Something
about P. I don't know. The PTP, something about it's just too much for me. I don't like it. I don't like it. I don't support it.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
We don't have time to talk about it, but I did want to briefly mention there was an article that was circulating from Variety earlier this week that people were circulating because it's like none of the DC actors from Justice League are coming back. But I'd like to point out a bulk of that article is pulled from Amber Heard's therapy sessions, and that's really fucking gross. Like, that's really disgusting. Like, I don't want the notes from my therapy sessions becoming public record because fans of my ex hate me. Like, that, what the fuck? Anyway, we don't need to get into that. I did have my notes. Let's move on to something else. Over at the Hollywood Reporter, there was a big article this week about how Marvel is changing up the way it makes TV. The company, the article says this, the company eschewed, company being Marvel, eschewed the traditional TV making model. It didn't commission pilots, but instead shot entire $150 million plus seasons of TV on the fly. It didn't hire showrunners, but instead depended on film executives to run its series. And as Marvel does for its movies, it relied on post-production and reshoots to fix what wasn't working. Insider familiar with the process says TV is a writer-driven medium. Marvel is a Marvel-driven medium. On the Oscar Isaac star Moon Knight, show creator and writer Jeremy Slater quit and director Mohamed Diab took the reins. Jessica Gao developed and wrote She-Hulk, Attorney at Law, but was sidelined once director Kat Coro came on board. Production was challenging with COVID hitting cast and crew, and Gao was brought back to oversee post-production, which is a typical showrunner duty, but it's the rare Marvel head writer who had such oversight. Details are murky, but and this is talking about Secret Invasion. In summer 2022, the production was debilitated as factions became entrenched and leaders vied for supremacy during Secret Invasion's pre-production in London. Quote, it was weeks of people not getting along and it erupted. Says an insider, the company dispatched Jonathan Schwartz, a senior executive and member of Marvel's creative steering committee known as the Parliament, to get Secret Invasion back on track when it was falling behind schedule and on the verge of losing some actors because of the commitments. So this was all about like, hey, you know, we're changing things over on Marvel. But it sounds like, I just feel like this is a great illustration of why WJ went on strike. I feel like this is a very good case study of that.
And the actors as well.
Yes.
As things seem to shift. I don't really understand how a company could think that shooting entire seasons with $150 million on the fly is the best, like, on the fly. Mm-hmm. What? It's a whole show. You're just fine by the seat of your pants. But in all fairness to them, it's low-key kind of working. And that's L-O-W-K-E-Y.
Yeah.
Kind of working.
Yeah.
People dig their stuff and they are performing well. And I'm not saying that everything's perfect, but for the most part, I feel like their stands are standstill. So who the F am I to be like, no, that's the wrong choice. It doesn't sound like it would be a good idea to me, but I guess.
What were you going to say, Adam?
Well, I have so much to say about this, so you're going to have to cut me off.
Okay.
As Roxy knows, I'm a big comic book guy, have been since the 80s. And I love Marvel, but like this all kind of reflects my fandom of Marvel, which is to say that I was a huge Marvel fan and collector for 10 or 12 years, in which I felt I had a complete story going back to pretty much the 70s to the present. And then at some point, it starts to repeat itself. It starts to collapse under its own weight, and it has to start again, and sometimes for a new audience. The promise of TV shows was too good to be true.
Yeah.
And I believed it when it was told to us. I'm like, you mean you're going to give us more and it's going to be as good? I was all for that. It wasn't.
I don't know why. I don't know if it was Chapek or Iger or Feige or why, but it wasn't. And it started to collapse. And for most people, all respect you due to you, Roxy, it hasn't been as good. You know, like it just hasn't. And you know, the last Ant-Man movie was such a dog pile. I listened on another podcast, someone was saying like internally Marvel really thought they had a great one. That last Ant-Man movie would suggest that maybe even internally they don't know when they're effing up anymore. So that's all to say that if they're pressing pause, if they're, I'm always a positive person. You know this about me, Roxy. Whenever anything is, I'm always like, okay, what's the positive outcome going to be, right?
Yeah.
I'm never going to be the person that's standing on the precipice of a new endeavor and saying, well, it's going to suck. I'm all ready for like, let's make it awesome. And then if it sucks, we could talk about that later. So all the things that they're doing now, I think a lot of it is not working. I think maybe some of it is the Chapek Iger stuff. A lot of it is the right stuff. Everything needs to slow down. These people are smarter than me. They got to know when they're making crap. Yeah. I can't believe that like they're waiting for me to watch it and be like, no, you missed it. Otherwise, they should hire me.
I would say I got that pretty accurate. My summary was Adam thinks that what they're currently doing is trash.
Yeah.
So
and for those that are curious what we're talking about, because I probably edited this out, there was a slight technical difficulty where we lost Adam for a second, and then Roxy predicted what he said, and I can concur. She was pretty close.
She knows me. We've done enough podcasts together that we could be AI of each other, I think.
I think also, I don't disagree with Adam. What they're doing right now isn't for me.
Yeah.
I was just saying in general, I don't know that that's hurting their bottom line right now. Maybe it is, but I don't know that. I can't sit here and say, Iger, that was the wrong call, or Chapek or whoever, when it started to be like this. I can't sit there and say that's an idiotic way to do it, because I don't know. Maybe that's the thing that's making them the most money and that's what they effing care about, because that's the studio heads.
Yeah.
So it's not working for me, but in general, is it working for them? I think maybe.
I think I might have buried the lead a little bit, because they're feeling the heat a little bit, in that the crux of this article is they're like 8 episodes into the new Daredevil show and they're starting from scratch. They fired the showrunners. They fired the directors. And they're having to like retool the entire show because it's not working. And I think as somebody, like everybody here, that's been covering and watching these movies for a while, I feel like if I were to try and diagnose it, I feel like a lot of big studio IPs, they're kind of a victim of their own success, in that a lot of Iron Man you can feel was kind of improvised and figured out in post, and that's kind of the way Jon Favreau makes movies, and Iron Man made them a lot of money. And so that's how they basically started making their projects ever since. It's also why the third act of Iron Man doesn't work. As much as I enjoy that movie, and I do.
I agree.
And I think that system has worked for them very well when it's 1, 2, 3 movies a year. Now, and it has a very clear, because I was talking about this with Sal, who I do another show with. You know, they had a very clear through line that kept people, it was easier for audiences to paper over the obvious flaws of those movies, because in phase 1, we're getting the Avengers together. In phases 2 and 3, we're getting the whole gang together to fight Thanos. And now, post that, we've introduced a lot more complex ideas in the multiverse and also TV shows. And so they just tried to keep doing the same thing they're doing, which is like, we'll fucking figure it out. And it's like, yeah, but now it's trickier now. The level of difficulty is trickier. TV is not movies, and the multiverse isn't the infinity. You know what I mean? Like a complex, both production-wise and narratively, they're complex ideas that you can't just kind of wing it without... Yeah. Potentially burning a lot of goodwill, which it feels like, if not with audiences, to Roxy's point, if they're not burning goodwill with audiences, I would imagine if you're letting people go halfway through production and actors have to come back for 50 million reshoots and stuff like that, you might be burning goodwill with the people you need to make your product, to the point that they feel the need to strike.
I think ultimately what makes Marvel so great when it's great and this is true of the comics, and this is what's true of the films, because when they got that essence of the comics, to me, it was like, oh my God, this feels like that thing of the comics. And that is just the story that makes you go, oh my God, wow, that's going, you know, that you get from great storytelling. And a lot of this stuff, it's just, they've lost it. Like, I don't need it all to be super interconnected, but the individual stories have to be great. Things have to feel important. We're lost in the miasma of the multiverse, to which makes everything feel less important. There's been things with Marvel that were not their fault, like Chadwick Boseman and the Jonathan Majors stuff. Like, it's tough to be king, you know? I mean, mm-hmm. and they are really experiencing that right now. So if they're able to slow down the train and just make people care again, I think it's as simple as that. I think people will forgive lackluster effects for great story. They'll forgive recasting for great story. That's all that matters. But like, there have been a lot where a lot of the films right now, you're like, you're watching for those post-credit scenes and they're the most interesting thing. And they should be like just a little extra taste. The stories themselves need to be done better. You know, that's what it comes down to. So I'm really hoping that they're recognizing that within, and they will. And they're going to have more competition now from the new DC. And Roxy and I are going to have to start our old podcast again mm-hmm. because it's going to be a new DC. But, yeah.
Coming 2025, starting with Superman Legacy.
All DJ, I want you... is that. Let's go. Yeah. DC movie news, the sequel, the reboot.
What did you? The biggest thing here, too, is to me, I think Daredevil is probably the best Marvel show that has ever existed. To me, I know that could be a little controversial. Original Incredible Hulk is up there. I think WandaVision has got great stuff. I really enjoy a lot of Loki stuff too. But Daredevil, to me, as a fan of like martial arts, the combat is more satisfying than even a lot of the films. The acting was great. New York City was great. So if they were to put up a show that wasn't as good as that, after now reclaiming the MCU and all that drama, particularly with the Daredevil character, they'd have a problem. So they must have had a really big problem to recognize that and scrap the whole thing and not even try to fix it. I don't know. What did you guys think of like those original Netflix shows and where was your expectation of what they were going to do with the MCU versions of them?
Well, I think I enjoy those Netflix shows. I think they had issues from a different master, which is the Netflix of it all. Certain dictates of how Netflix expects their productions to work that I think might not have benefited. You know, they were serving two masters. So it's like, we can't do too much in the MCU stuff because we're not technically part of it. Like, we're kind of part of it. And then we have to we have to fill this 13 episode order, and it has to be structured this way because Netflix. But I think you're right in that there is a massive expectation from that fan base. So in a way, this Daredevil show is again serving two masters. I wanted to ask Roxy, because a lot of the way this is framed, specifically in the Daredevil stuff, is, okay, we're going back to the way TV was done, baby, with showrunners and scripts ahead of time and all that stuff. And they're making it seem like they came to like a come to Jesus moment. And I was like, is that what happened, or is it we have a new deal with the WGA and we can't do our bullshit anymore? What do you think it is, Roxy?
What do you mean? Is it one or the other?
What do you mean? Which they're saying they're going away from this like flying by the seat of our pants and doing more traditional TV with writers' rooms and showrunners and stuff and multiple seasons and stuff like that.
Right, but both, right? Yeah. Like, I think it's that their back's against the wall and they're being told. You're saying, is it like that they have to or that they want to, essentially?
I think I was wondering if it's one of those, like, we have to change what we're doing because there's no WGA rules, but we're going to frame it as if it's our choice. Yeah. Yeah.
Probably a little bit of A, a little bit of B, right?
That makes sense. Yeah.
I mean, everybody wants to end up looking like the good guy, but also, what was the plan? What are you going to do? Like, mm-hmm. Obviously we're going to talk more about the strike situation, but I think that people are looking really, people as in fans are really starting to catch on to the fact that these people are trash in certain ways. And like, so I think that it's a little bit of a PR move. Yeah.
Speaking of, this week, negotiations with SAG and the AMPTP,
yes, DJ.
broke. Did I get it right? Damn it. No, they broke down. How long is this going to go? how long? And also, what are they? It's like the way it came across to me is the studios were like, listen, they're being unreasonable. We're going to walk away. And do what? You're going to have to come back eventually. Like, you know what I mean? Like, walk away to what?
I think it's all about how they're looking right now. Like, we're hearing this is a scare tactic. That they came back to the table with an agreement that was worse than what they had originally pitched, which is like unfathomable. And then when it was pitched about the streaming numbers being what allows people to get their bonuses, that they were like, absolutely not, under zero circumstances, that would cause us to spend $800 million more dollars a year. And it's like, oh, so is there that many people watching? Like, are you guys saying that that's not something you could do because there's so many effing people watching these shows that you're unwilling to hit that marker? Like, that's why you guys don't want the numbers to be shown or told, just for so many reasons. Them walking away, I think that's a really, really upsetting moment, but also a moment for audiences around the world to look at them being like, this is ridiculous and not fair treatment. And
if we tell people how many people are watching, I'm going to personally stop being able to launder hundreds of millions of dollars into my Cayman account. People will know. It'll be public. I have to admit it on my RS sheets.
And it works on both ends, too. They also don't want people to know how many people aren't watching because there's been such an arms race with creating so much production that they have spent way more than $800 million, probably, certainly collectively, on, you know, crappy content that people have not gravitated toward, right? Like, just enormous. And that's all going to go away. I think result of these strikes is just, you know, people, actors, writers are going to get better contracts, but less of them are going to be reaping those benefits because there's this production bonanza. I think there was this production bonanza and people were like, whoa, we're not getting anything for all this production. Well, then now there's just going to be a lot less production, you know, and that's just, but it was an arms race. And I think everybody thought that the streaming thing was going to be this answer. And now it's just not working. The model is not working. And you see why advertising works as a model, because it's perpetual income from huge companies with a lot of money. Right. Yeah. So we pulled the thing apart and now we're kind of putting it back together. And I think we're eventually going to get commercial television with some more boobs and swear words, which, you know, is fine.
I'm okay with that.
It is weird that during this time, I've seen more and more people being like, you know, remember the good old days of like cable, like paying for something that still had commercials. And it's like, what are you talking about? What world do you live in? Like, I like the streaming services and all that stuff. I just think people should get paid fairly. And Adam, to your point, I mean, you're right. Cause Roxy and I've talked about this before. It's not like Bob Iger getting less money is not on the table. It's not like, hey, we can keep making the productions we're making. It just requires our CEOs to not get hundreds of millions of dollars. That's not going to be, that would probably be what's best for the company. That's not what's going to happen. That's not how things work.
Because where would the yacht party be every year, DJ?
How would we do it? It's impossible. There's no other way. It's not like there's other studios that we just mentioned when we were talking about stuff like A24 or Neon or these other producers, whatever. It's not like it works other ways, other places. We can't do it differently.
How long are you guys thinking this is going to be now? Because
that's,
I know
that I was going to ask you, Roxy. I don't know.
my grandma yesterday was talking to me and she was like, is the SAG thing done yet? Mm-hmm. And I was like, no,
it's never.
But the writers are back now. Wow. Yes, that is what it boils down to, Grammy. The SAG thing should be done because that should be. She was like, but it was already weeks ago. I'm like, yeah, that is also accurate, Graham. Yeah. I don't know what to tell you. Like, all the people in my life who don't know anything about the industry all thought one then the other, back to back, boom, boom, right. Bang, we're done.
We all assumed it was a wrap. I think. I mean, and false to that. Now we're talking about what's going into production and this and that. Meanwhile, it's like, well, ain't nothing really happening with Daredevil right now, except Charlie Cox is sitting there on the sidelines and, you know, waiting to get the costume.
It's fun. What were we going to say?
I was just going to say, it's kind of off the point, but it was like to that point about Daredevil specifically, like what I had heard was that, like, you know, they didn't have him getting into costume until like 4 episodes. And it was like, well, no. Again, it doesn't matter if it's good, right? Yeah. Like that could work if it's good. Who knows, right?
Yeah.
It just goes back to, like, I think they have to focus on the quality of the content, and there's going to be less of it. And, you know, to your point, DJ, about is this a result of the WGA strike settlement or in wanting to do better? I agree with Roxy. It has to be both, because Iger had already spoke about this before the strike, right? He was public about slowing down the amount of content. So I think when he's talking about slowing down and focusing on quality, I do think that points to, you know, at least within Marvel, recognizing the lack of quality, right? Like the slowing down, right? After Endgame, sort of.
Yeah, kind of absolutely.
But also, it's a good look. Mm-hmm. So
exactly.
And to Roxy's point about when all this will end, I think the answer to that question is, what is the lead time of people writing before it goes up on screen? Like, how many episodes do we need to have in the can of Abbott Elementary before we need those actors back? And that's when the strike will end. Because I do think the actors are in a better position than writers, because theoretically, you can, if something's already written, you can film it with the actors. If you don't have the actors, you're dead on a rock. You can't really do anything.
I think that the season is going to be the biggest thing here too, though, DJ. Not just how many, you know, say it takes the writers a month for them to be like fully back in the swing, whatever. We're at November. Mm-hmm. We're at Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Then we're at Christmas. I mean, I think there's just no way we're not looking at 2024 for things to actually be back moving and grooving. That's just, I don't see any world in which things
basically have a month to get it done, or it's not going to get done. I'd like to think before Thanksgiving. I'm going to go out and just be optimistic and say before Thanksgiving.
With a deal, maybe. But yes, possibly with a deal, but then are production's going to start back in the second week of December for 1 week?
Listen, I'm going to side with Adam because it personally benefits me for them to get the deal done before the end of the year. So
I think it will be. I think the deal will be done. I just don't think that Hollywood, I don't think productions are going to start until 2024, because they're not going to come back for a week before Christmas.
Happy Hanukkah. Merry Christmas. Hopefully you'll have a deal in your stockings to go into 2024.
Right. Roxy, you don't foresee like a thing where like the unions are like, hey, we're skipping the holidays, Nick, this year. Everybody needs to get back to work. Everybody understands. Rah, rah, rah. Let's work through Christmas.
I really don't. But I mean,
I would. I'd be like, let's go.
Yeah, me too, because a paycheck.
You need to finish Deadpool.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no, I mean, already the industry is like completely dead for the last 2 weeks of the year.
Yeah.
Like there's no work being done in the last full 2 weeks.
The one thing I will say, because you're absolutely right, Roxy, the one thing that could matter is we've got some tent poles coming out during the holiday season that they might want their actors doing some promotion on. Yeah,
for sure that. Yeah, yeah. I think that will be true.
Yeah, but you're right. I think production is probably not going to be hopefully deal before the end of the year. Production, I think Roxy might be right about that one. Listen, if you're at home, you're just getting home from picketing and you're like, oh man, how can I make myself a good meal and relax? That's right, boys and girls, we're talking about cooking. Adam, we specifically, when I brought this topic up to Roxy, she specifically mentioned you. Why is that? What, for those kids that don't know, what is your relationship with cooking?
Well, I've been cooking for a long time. Food has been a part of my life since I was a chubby little kid reading comic books and not getting any exercise. Mm-hmm. I was also a very curious child. So at a certain point, I just was very curious about how to make food. And, when I started having jobs when I was like 15, 16, I always wanted to work in food, be it in summer camp or Dunkin' Donuts or in college as a short order cook. When I started to have parties and socialize in my later teens and 20s, I always had food at my parties. And I realized the difference between my parties and other people's parties was that when people ate, they didn't put their faces through as many windows. There wasn't as much screaming and crying. You know, food is a great base. And I just, love to eat. I studied acting, in college, and then as time went on and there was actually an outlet for theater and food to kind of fuse through things like Food Network, which was also something I discovered, I think as a freshman in college in 1995, I discovered like Emeril. Mm-hmm. And that kind of put me onto like New Orleans food and this whole other world of cooking in Louisiana. And then I started going to Louisiana. And I discovered barbecue, like Franklin barbecue, actually in Syracuse of all places. Yeah. And it just became like a thing that I wanted to pursue always for my life. I didn't think it would be my career. It has become my career. While I've continued to work in television and hosting, most of that has been with food, right? Yeah. So my two things have kind of been together. I've been working with Doghouse doing sausages, but a lot of my job with Doghouse is traveling around the country and doing television being like their sort of brand ambassador, because, I think people can hear when I talk about food, the passion that's in my voice. It's not bullshit. It's real. And I love it. And I could always talk about food and it brings everybody together and it, makes us curious about people's cultures. It's a great way to travel the world through the prism of food. And it's something that you can never know it all about. I mean, mm-hmm. There's just still always going to be more you don't know than you do. And I just think that is it's an awesome hobby and an undertaking. And I'd rather be in the kitchen than on the golf course.
Yeah. What were you going to say, Roxy?
I think also to Adam's point about like why he has become more of a brand ambassador and you can hear the passion in his voice. You're also extremely not pretentious about food, which I think is very helpful to people because it is very intimidating talking to chefs a lot of the time. And like Adam came on the World Girls and we did an episode deep frying turkey and making food that when I was even having him come on, I was like, am I going to even be able to do the chef things? Like, and he was like, yeah, whatever. And I was like, the kitchen is tiny. I don't have good like pots or pans. He's like, oh, whatever. That doesn't fucking matter at all. Like it feels more about like you can do it too, which is a much easier way to get into it than sometimes if you're watching some of these cooking shows or whatever, where you're just like, I don't know what those words mean that mm-hmm. you guys are using. I don't know how to blanch shit or whatever.
Right.
I need to be like that. I think that's just when you throw something in water or something, but whatever. I don't know what it means. Mm-hmm. So you've got a good way about you with that. And I think that that's also why you've done well in the TV space when it comes to food. Anyway.
Yeah, you could jump down a YouTube rabbit hole about just about anything or a TikTok rabbit hole. And I do that too. I'm very much into baking bread now and making pizza. I just redid my outdoor kitchen and I will not stop until I have pizza that is as good as where I grew up in Long Island, and that leads back to these rabbit holes. And you're never following one person's recipe, but you're kind of taking a technique and it's a puzzle. And just because the fact that there's so much video and information out there, very rarely does one person have all the answers you're looking for.
Yeah.
And it's become fun to become a detective. And every time I work on a recipe, I'm looking at 10 existing things, kind of cobbling together where I'm going to start based on those. And then I start there. And then the adventure begins. And as long as you're kind of like taking notes, which I'm terrible at, but I've had to get better at, as long as you're recording what you're doing, it will evolve. And you'll be able to get there. I will come up with this ultimate pizza dough. And it's already gotten really good. Because that is just so satisfying to be able to do that for yourself. It's always going to be easier to order a pizza.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's always going to be easier. But man, when like, you know, right now I have like two little kids at home and I'll make a batch of pizza dough and I'll have them in my freezer and I can be like, are we going to do pizza tonight? I'll just take them out of the freezer a couple of hours before. And I know that like my daughter, who's like two right now, like she's going to be making pizzas soon.
Yeah.
She was cracking eggs with me right before I got on the phone with you, and she sucks at it, but she's going to get so much better. You know, she's like, I do it. I do it. And I'm like, trying to hold my hands over the thing to control how she cracks it. And she just goes, smash!
Yeah.
And it's everywhere. But I'm like, you're doing it. And you're like, not even two. She's two next week. So like, I wasn't doing that at that age. So it's just, you know, it's just a never-ending source of joy, whether it's the eating, but also the making, so much more than making and the learning and the talking and all that, you know. It is kind of boring to just be able to buy and have everything, you know. That is unsatisfying.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up, because listening to you talk, it brings up something I think that I find fascinating, which is I think a lot of people treat food as just like a thing, you like, I'm going to go grab something or whatever, like get through it. And I think what you're touching on is this idea of food, and not just food, but cooking as like a communal act. Like it's something we all have to do. We all have to eat. And so on some base level, it connects us. And I think in like when you're talking about theater, that's another thing. Or like, you know, when you're in the arts program or whatever, performing, that's another thing. The entertainment we consume also binds us. I find the parallels there interesting.
Yeah, I've always seen cooking as a performance. You know, if you're cooking in a restaurant or somewhere, you're putting yourself out there to be received by an audience on a plate. And when those plates get emptied, it's like applause, right? And when they don't, you can kind of tell. It's pretty honest, right?
Yeah.
So that is certainly an aspect of it. I also, you know, I don't waste a single meal. Whatever it is, like, I just don't waste a meal. And somehow, you know, we keep getting through the days without wasting a meal. And that just means that everything is chosen, right? Yeah. It just means, you know, we with my family, try to have a really nice breakfast every day. You know, the kids will get like some kind of lunch or something. I'm not huge on lunch all the time. I'm more of a big breakfast, start your day, and not let a big lunch kind of slow you down. But then like dinner, you know, sometimes it's got to be fast and simple. Sometimes it's more thought out. But it is definitely something that we need to always do. And if I'm just ordering food and it comes in, like my wife gives me crap, like I won't, I'll have to resuscitate it, right? Like if we get yuca fries, like they've got to be in the air fryer, coming back to fried crispiness. If we do order pizza, instead of making pizza, my oven has got to be on 45 minutes ahead of time, because there's no way I'm eating that pizza out of the box. It's not happening. It's got to get resuscitated. Something has to be done to it.
Yeah, I respect that. I respect that, and I appreciate it. I think, Roxy, what's your relationship with cooking?
Well, Adam saw me do it. I would say that, okay. I cook a lot, actually. Yeah, Adam's seen me be a cook person. I actually cook a lot because, first of all, I am single and alone. So I'm not, I actually like going out to eat by myself, but I'm not doing that every meal, right? Yeah. So I, especially during the pandemic, I got very creative. When Adam said he doesn't waste any meal, what I thought he was referencing, and maybe this is part of it, but same with me, like in terms of, I will throw random shit together if it's the last of the things. And if you are single or you are by yourself cooking, you end up having some like weird leftover things sometimes, because you just can't eat all of the things that you buy at the grocery store. So like a lot of stir fries at the end of the week that kind of thing, or like a lot of like really fully loaded pasta sauces or salads that like include things that you bought for something completely different. I cooked a lot with my mom growing up. She had a lot of Italian family, even though we are Jewish. Everybody who married in was Italian. So we have a lot of Italian, like the pastas, bruschetta, a lot of seafood, shrimp, steaks I love to cook. So yeah, I definitely cook maybe like 6-7 meals a week minimum, every day for sure. Yeah. And I really do like it. And I'm getting pretty good at the things I'm good at.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other things, not as much. Like, you know, there are things that scare me. I just am getting an air fryer for the first time. I'm excited to be able to dabble in a whole new world of that, which will be cool. But like, yeah, in terms of like Asian foods, right? There's a lot of things I want to try to learn that just scare the crap out of me where I'm like, oh, am I ever going to be able to do that as well as just ordering Chinese food? Like, am I ever going to be able to make Chinese food that tastes even close to as well as Genghis Khan tastes? Probably not. Probably not. But like, that is what Adam's talking about, the fun of it and attempting. So that's my relationship with cooking. DJ, I know that you, you do a breakfast too, like Adam.
Yeah. I cook some pretty basic things. Although listening to Adam, I think I'm starting to be able to pinpoint one of my fatal flaws when it comes to cooking is I don't have a lot of patience with myself. So that idea of experimenting and learning requires making mistakes, and I don't like that part of the. I want to get it right. I want that first pancake to be perfect. And so I think that has limited me to doing pretty basic. Like we do the homemade. Pizza, although I don't make my own dough. I'm not at that level yet. You know, I'll make a mean quesadilla, breakfast burrito, stuff like that. But it's pretty basic, comparatively. Pretty basic stuff.
Yeah, you have to have that patience, man. Yeah, you have to fail.
I'm just not a patient person in general. It's something I should work on. It's something I need to work on. And maybe cooking is a good way to do that.
A lot of this is the cooking aspect of it, but Adam, I am curious about the TV aspect of it because some of my friends are chefs or beginner chefs, especially during the pandemic. I think we saw a lot of people were like, okay, I can do this. But the how to get on something like Next Food Network Star or like how to be a TV chef, how does one even go about starting to do that? Do you get found? Do you apply? Like what?
Yeah, I think it's very different now because so many people are doing it on TikTok. I even have a new series on TikTok called My Dinners with Adam.
It's where awesome.
Oh, thank you. But that's just, you know, because my friend is very much in that world and I'm still doing the same thing, but he knows how to edit and make something that is appealing for that world. But for me at the time, when I got on Next Food Network Star, we had a restaurant in Philadelphia called The Smoke Joint, a barbecue experience, and it had just closed. You know, we made all the colossal mistakes one could make. And, you know, I had my theater background, and they had an open call of interviews in Philly. And a lot of that was, I think, me being in Philadelphia, where not every other person is an actor, right? Talking about food made it easier for me to kind of make the finals and then kind of just be seen. And then I just got very lucky because I was not a very good cook when I was on that show. My experience was very limited to barbecue. I was not very good at doing things quickly. I was very disorganized. It was all my personality that got me through. And I somehow made it all the way through that show until the point where like I didn't win that show, but they still gave me my own traveling shows on Food Network where I was not cooking, but I was going around being curious and talking about food, which, you know, are the best jobs one can have. Mm-hmm. I think there's still probably a similar application process, but you get the chance to do it on YouTube, on TikTok for nothing. So people are, I would say the competition is much higher now because people are able to try it. I can still say that most of the people I see doing it on YouTube, you know, pretty much suck. Like people don't know how to talk and cook, or they don't know how to make something, you know, visual or appealing. It can be challenging, right? To be working and cooking at the same time and having an awareness of how something should look.
Yeah.
I'm obviously much more sensitive to like production value, having worked on a lot of actual shows.
Yeah, absolutely.
the TikTok show you referenced, just so people know, My Dinners with Adam, I'm like completely obsessed with it. It's such a good little premise where essentially his friend will give him two surprise ingredients to put in a staple something like chicken liver and raspberries or like licorice and stuff. And it's bizarre. And watching,
right, like we already decide what we're going to make.
Yeah.
Like, he comes in, I know I'm making pizza or I know I'm making pad thai. And he's going to give me two ingredients that have nothing to do with that dish.
Mm-hmm.
And it sucks sometimes because I'm like, I was really looking forward to making this thing. But other times it gets me out of my head and I become a better chef than I ever would have been because I'm not that risky of a chef. I'm not that creative or out of the box of a chef.
Yeah.
So it forces me to do something. And the other advantage is nobody can criticize me for appropriating a recipe or misappropriating a family tradition because it is always going to be based on a thing and it's never going to be that exact thing, right? Yeah. So, you know, you might say my al pastor is not like your abuela's, but I'm like, yeah, she also didn't have to make it with Hershey's Kisses, right? Mm-hmm. So you start with a foundation and you know, we try to get something as delicious as possible. Most of the time we've done it, it's worked out. One of the ones that's coming up that he hasn't posted yet because Alex has fallen very behind in his editing. It was just a disaster. I'm making a dish pizza, and one of the ingredients was green jello, lime jello.
Jeez.
And I tried to make
it. You use the pack, or you had to make it, it had to actually be the jello. Could it be before it was jello? You know what I mean?
I mean, I think I could interpret however I wanted. So yeah. I could have used it in the dough and made a green dough. I said if it's jello, I need it to be jello. So I made like a mold and I poured the green jello into a thin pan and I put like chopped pepperoni and chilies and all those things. And my idea was to make like almost like a. Like an Asian gelatiny kind of like meat product that you would put on top of the pizza. And lime is a good flavor that could work. But it was like the flavor of that artificial lime jello just sang through everything. And it was like, there's a good pizza under here that is topped with some bullshit jello stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, that is us also just trying to capture an audience in an extremely crowded field and needing some kind of hook.
Yeah. You guys are growing quickly on there. Really cool to see.
And I just brought it up in the thing. Mike Joyce just checked it out and followed. Oh, yeah. And there will be links in the description. But I did want to ask you that because as somebody that's been working to be a filmmaker and stuff like that, you know, you get a lot of people like Kevin Smith. It's like, it's easier than ever. Just pick up a camera. Anybody can make a movie. And it's like, yeah, I get you. I hear you. But the flip side of that is, everybody can just pick up a camera and make a movie. You know what I mean? Now I'm not just competing with five guys. I'm competing with like 5 million guys. Feel the same thing with the cooking space with like TikTok, where it's like, in some ways it's more accessible, in some ways it's actually less accessible?
It's harder. It's just like with podcasts. There's a million podcasts out there, and like how many of them are actually getting listened to?
Yeah.
Right. But the cream will rise, you know, it takes time and it takes patience. It's just like we were saying with cooking. It's like, you know, I'm not good at a thing is a pretty crappy answer to I'm not there yet, right? Like what you're talking about is like, you don't have the patience. But it's like, yeah, if you were great at making a pizza dough your first time out, then is pizza dough even worth making, right? Mm-hmm. If it's that easy, then what's the point?
Yeah.
Right? You kind of want to get lost in it, right? You kind of want to be like, I see that. Oh my God, I can eat, you know, and like that you have to enjoy that part of the process, right?
Yeah.
You have to enjoy being bad for a little while because then you really have ownership of something that has value. And what value would it have if anybody could turn it on and open it up and it's just as good, it's not as exciting, right?
Yeah.
If you get good at something like making a bread or a dough, it's like you are now part of a lineage of bread makers, you know? It's like you're part of something bigger than you are, and you're connected to the past in a really cool way. And you know, you can't teach someone for that to be interesting to you, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you can teach someone the steps of cooking, but to have an interest of in it to push through and want to be bad to get to the good, that's probably either there or it isn't, I would think, you know, just like anything. I mean, I'm so ignorant of like the car I drive around and every day. The thing that hold my family's lives in its hands, and I'm so ignorant of this thing. I should know more about that than I do about potato flakes, you know, but that's where my interests lie.
Yeah, absolutely.
For people who are intimidated though, Adam, like, what is the best first dish to start with that you feel like people could easily kind of nail that you don't, they don't need to know that much about? Because I do think like pizza dough, even for me, dough, it's like, it is time consuming, and the refrigeration process and rising. Like, what is something where you, when people are brand new to cooking, but they're like, you know, it's like when people teach people on a guitar, a first song to play just to get them into it, like so that they can get it and then kind of go from there. Is there something? Where does great,
a lot of people say like eggs are a great judge of a cook, right? Because they're so simple and so quick, right? And, and that people watch The Bear. That omelet was a huge part of the episode, and that omelet was kind of based on Ludo Lefebvre's omelet at one of his restaurants in LA. So I think learning how to make a great omelet is a great place to start. Like watching some videos about how to scramble an egg properly, how to not overcook it, how to fold it out and stuff it, because I think it's something that we all eat. And it's very practical. I think that is a great place to start. You know, I think pasta, I've been having a lot of fun with pasta lately. People are aware of like the use of pasta water, and you could use dried pasta and canned tomatoes, but just the idea of like using some of the starchy water in the pasta as you add it to that dish and a dollop of butter, bringing that together, you'll find yourself like in an elevated place as opposed to just like dumping the pasta sauce on the pasta and mixing them together, right?
Yeah.
This whole idea of using the starchy pasta water to emulsify it, get closer to that thing that like you get at a restaurant.
Yeah.
So I think those are two things that everybody makes that they can get better at. I don't know. Is that a good answer to that?
Perfect.
I don't know.
It's
great. Yeah, I think that's a great answer.
It's just like everything. Like, but I think, you know, it's probably best to put that energy into something you're already going to eat. And I guess by that, I mean like, yeah, you can learn to make your own ravioli, but you're not doing that every day. And so it's like, I don't know that I would put my energy into that. I would put my energy into the things that I'm going to eat the most. Start there.
Yeah.
And then start to expand slowly, right? And and don't try to do everything at once. Like, focus on something for a while before you kind of move on, right? Like, do everything in like phases. Like, I can be guilty of that too. I'm like, oh, now I'm going to make this kind of pasta and I'm over here. And like, and it all sort of is very mediocre. Right, because I'm not really putting in the reps on one thing.
So I
think that starting simple, starting with what you enjoy, and again, there's so much video content out there on YouTube. Pick the thing you want to make and watch 10 different videos and 10 different approaches, and find your attempt somewhere in the middle. Like, like this aspect of that, and that's where I'm going to start.
I like that a lot. We got a couple questions from the Discord before we let you go today. Jake Hefner asks, do you all know any good cooking hacks? I think I would rephrase this to be, what is your favorite cooking hack that you would like to share with the audience?
Favorite
or a good one.
Hack. Yeah. Oh,
the pasta water was a good one.
A good one.
Pasta water is definitely a good one. Let's see. There's... well, I was talking about eggs before. The idea that they did this in The Bear, after you scramble your eggs, you pass them through a strainer, and that helps break them up. So you get like a really smooth, silky egg. I think that is a great one.
You taught me one about salt. Because like usually if I'm boiling water and then you'll just go like this with the salt and be done. And you were like, no, this, it should be as salty as the ocean. If you're going to make boiled water with salt, it's supposed to be as salty as the ocean. I thought it was just like sprinkle and then be done with it. I thought that was a good hack, and it makes things a lot more flavorful.
Definitely. Definitely. I'd say this isn't a hack, but it's an advice. Like, definitely have a digital probe thermometer. You know, it's very easy to overcook food or undercook food, and science is on your side. And the trick to taking the temperature of anything is not to just stick it in and look at that temperature, but you kind of want to pull back till you get the lowest temperature, meaning that you always want to take your temperature of where the food is the thickest. And if you stick a thermometer in and the point of the thermometer is close to the outside, it's going to read a very high temperature. You want to pull back till you get the lowest and take it out there. And that's very important with something like fish, where a matter of 10 to 15 degrees can make a huge difference. One really cool hack or trick, something that I love to do, and it's very healthy, is we get like skin on salmon, and this could be frozen. And you can season it, let it sit for a while, and any kind of seasoning, salt and pepper, or if a marinade, if you do marinate it, you wipe off the marinade of the skin, and you start that in a cool pan, skin side down, and crank up the heat, and you could get the skin super, super crispy. And then you kind of just flip it over and let it finish until it's just about 115 or 120 degrees. Then off heat, it will continue to cook through. And that crispy skin is like, again, it's like a super restaurant-y cool thing. And the salmon skin is extremely healthy. And
are you saying on a stovetop, Adam? Or in the
You can do that in a pan. In a nonstick pan is easy, but usually even in a well-seasoned pan, that'll work too.
Yeah.
And it's just like the crispy skin. And then when you flip it over, don't put any sauce on that skin. Like, let it be crispy. And if you're using a sauce, put the sauce on the plate. And crispy salmon skin is just, it's something that I've only really discovered that I could do at home in the past few years. And it's really, really simple.
That's awesome. A lot of great tips. Last question from Mike Joyce. And this is to the class, what is your go-to meal?
Said I've been doing a lot of pizza. To Roxy's point, I think it's always great to get a good stir fry sauce together. And I'll make a good sauce with a combination of like oyster sauce and a little bit of chicken or vegetable stock and a little bit of cornstarch in there. And then you kind of whisk that together and that's your sauce. And then you kind of stir fry your vegetables together and whatever meat or anything you have in the house, and you add that. And that is just always a very quick, great, satisfying way to feed a lot of people with rice or some other kind of grain. Because I don't like to waste any food in the house either. So vegetables that look like they're on their way out, you know, cut the brown off the edges, like almost everything is savable. And here's another hack. If vegetables are wilted and starting to brown, like take anything, throw it in a bag, throw it in the freezer. It's going to become part of a stock, right? Mm-hmm. Save all your bones. If you get chicken, even from the store, save those bones, put them in a bag, put them in the freezer. Yeah. When you get a chance, you make your own broth or stock or whatever. It doesn't need to follow a recipe. It's basically just water that is flavored by those things.
Yeah.
And it could be anything, and it will make any of those foods taste good. That having that fresh stock on hand will flavor any of your great little stir fries. But yeah, for me, it's like, it's always some kind of eggs in the morning, some kind of stir fry vegetable, you know, with some kind of protein is always great. If I'm not planning something like special, like I'm not like doing a homemade pasta with a ragu or something like that, which takes a lot of planning and time and articulation.
Yeah. Roxy, what about you? Go-to meal?
Honestly, probably stir fry, but also I do a lot of quick bolognese's. Like I'll do a basic onion, mushroom, carrots, garlic. I roast my own tomatoes. It doesn't take that long. And then I'll throw them in there too. And it's like a half an hour turkey, ground turkey or ground beef, depending on what. So it's like, if I want something quick, I have a long bolognese that I make too. But I can make a pretty quick one that I'm like, oh, that was good. That's got a lot of stuff.
And to that point, it's like, you know, recipes are great to follow, but they're guidelines. And I always say, look at 10 recipes and come up with where you're going to start. Because once you understand the why of the cooking and the what, like, what am I doing? Why am I doing it? Then you can apply that to anything, right? You don't have to go out shopping for a single herb, right?
Yeah.
You look, what do I have on hand that I can replace? Because you understand the concept of what's going on. And all recipes are very arbitrarily written and they're passed down and moved on and they evolve. There's very few of them that can't be improvised upon, right?
Yeah.
Almost nothing, you know? And that's kind of the point of my dinners with Adam too. It's like, all right, well, we're making it different this before to rely on technique and things like that to come up with something new.
Yeah, that reminds me of my grandma was Greek and she had these Greek cookies that she made, and was the parts of the recipe were very much like, it has to be a wood spoon. Nothing. The spoon has to be wooden. And it's like, well, is the family going to be cursed if I don't? What does that mean?
Baking is so different though. That I love baking, but it's so much less improvised. Like what Adam's talking about cooking. That's why I like cooking more, because with baking, like if you do not follow what you need to do in order for it to work, it will rise. It doesn't like taste, it tastes like shithole, you know? Mm-hmm. There's just so much less room for like a pinch of this, an extra this.
No.
Which is why I'm big into using scales, you know, just like with the thermometer, like with baking, everything should be about weight, you know, because measuring a cup of flour is so different, whether it's sifted or unsifted, or if you pack it in, you pack it, you don't. If a good recipe should be, everything should be done by weight. Yeah. And weight doesn't lie. And there's a lot less variables with that.
Yeah. A lot of good tips for everybody. For me, go-to meal, if we take that as go-to meal, is what I like to eat, it's fucking pizza. But if we're going to go-to meal is what I make more regularly, probably breakfast burritos. I usually make enough to last me like... enough filling to last me like 3 or 4 days. Usually probably turkey sausage, green pepper, onion, really basic shit. Seasoning I like, you know, I keep it simple. Adam, thank you so much for joining us, giving us a lot of great insight and advice to people that might want to be getting into cooking. Remind everybody at home where they can find you and what they should be looking out for from you.
Okay, well, I did think of one other go-to recipe I had that I had to tell everyone.
Please.
This is a really great breakfast. It's kind of a hack. It's something that most people don't do. I use a pressure cooker for it. You don't have to. Steel-cut oats, right? Okay. Which are very coarse oatmeal. And into that, you add your leftover vegetables or frozen vegetables. You add a little bouillon, what have you. And on top of that, you put some poached eggs. And that is like a savory... oatmeal that you can have in the morning, because the carbohydrates from oatmeal are long, slow burning carbohydrates, which will give you energy throughout the day. And typically we think of oatmeal as something that we add more sugar to.
Yeah.
So that's something I always like to tell people, because people don't always think of that, a steel cut oatmeal as a base. It's like thinking like a breakfast risotto.
Gotcha.
It's a little out of the box, but like, love it. And it's extremely healthy and flavorful, which is how I like to eat, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you were saying, where can people find me?
Yeah, if they want more great tips like that, where can they find you?
Okay, you can find me on Instagram at Adam Gertler. My Dinners with Adam on TikTok. I'm going to talk to Alex. We're going to be editing more, getting more of those out there. But leave comments. Let us know what you like to hear. I'm also on TikTok, but I'm not like putting out videos. But if you want to follow me and send me messages, I suppose I can find them.
Mm-hmm.
Also, at Eat Bestie on Instagram, new sandwich concept. We just had our first big premiere at Power Trip, where Metallica, AC/DC, and Guns N' Roses played. And we'll be around more. We're doing incredibly flavorful Italian-inspired sandwiches on handmade focaccia. I'm very excited about that. Also Doghouse. I am the Verstmacher for Doghouse. Make all the sausages and hot dogs and promote that. All things in the form of a sausage. We've had a lot of fun with the Absolute Worst Sausage series this year, and we'll be continuing that.
When is the Surf and Turf coming back? When
very
do
soon.
I get
very soon. Very soon.
The best sausage I ever had in my entire life. I dream of it every time I see it.
Rob is referring to a steak and lobster sausage we made once for a BuzzFeed video, and then gave it to her and had like actual ribeye steak and fresh lobster tail in there. I mean, yeah, sure. That should be easy. We could sell that for, you know, $30.
It was 10 years ago, and I bring it up every conversation I have with Adam.
I know.
So good.
It never gets annoying.
Yeah. So, Roxy, what about you? Where can the kids find the stuff you're working on?
Everywhere at Roxy Stryer.
You can find me at DJ Talks Trash. You can follow the show everywhere that matters at Only Stupid Answers, but on Twitter/X.
You ain't got the vowels from stupid.
I want to thank you all for joining us, and we will see you next time.